Politically informed without being politically involved. This is one I like to hear, sitting where you are. I believe the title itself suggests that it's all right to be politically informed. It intimates that, isn't it? Just the way it's worded. And yet, not to cross the line of becoming politically involved. The Anabaptists actually are known for, and have always recognized, the importance of the separation of church and state. In fact, the Anabaptists can credit their formation, at least in part, because of a desire to follow the Bible on this very issue. It was the issue that prompted the division. Now, not all Mennonites have always kept clearly that distinction. In fact, in Holland, back in the 1800s, those Holland Mennonites became very rich merchants. And not surprisingly, these rich, powerful merchants found that being politically involved actually gave them an edge and helped them, assisted them. And in dealing with the threats against their ships from others, you know, being plundered, being the pirates, so to speak, those that were threatening their vessels. Well, not only did they depend on the state to defend them and protect them, but they themselves also took up arms to defend themselves. In fact, in one of the large Mennonite churches over in Holland, there's a model of a large ship, and it's a replica of the man of war ship that was purchased and operated by the merchants of that church to protect their ships from the pirates. Shame on them. What a digression from the calling that we've been called to. So tonight we're not there, and I'm going to assume that we embrace the spiritual or the biblical concept, I guess you might say, of the separation of church and state. I'm going to assume that you also, with me, believe that it's wrong for the Christian to participate in politics. I'm going to assume that we accept the teachings of Matthew 13, which clearly separates Christ's kingdom on one side with the world kingdoms, the political arena, on the other. Now, maybe before we go into the main part of the message, we should make sure that we understand the terms in the title. First of all, politically informed. Political. What's political? Political has to do with the government and the way it's governed. The leaders of political parties, we know they're called politicians. So it has to do with the framework or the type of government that we're talking about. Those informed simply means having a knowledge of or be educated on an issue. When we think about being involved, and being involved is more than just having a knowledge of, just being informed. Being involved means being connected, either by participation or association. It could involve a physical involvement, or maybe even it may only go as far as an emotional involvement. But I believe being involved is a step beyond just being informed. And I might say that one of the things that I think we have to be careful on, and I'm going to say it now lest I forget about it later, because I know it's not in my notes, but I thought of it oftentimes that we sometimes think of ourselves as being a separated people. We're the church, that's the world, but in our desire to be informed, and I think there's a right place for that, if we're not careful, we can become actually emotionally involved, even though we're not physically involved. And I believe that if once we get so emotionally involved that it disturbs us, it bothers us, we can't sleep, we worry, we can become overly concerned, I think then we probably already have gone over that line of where we're not simply informed, but we're also involved. For an outline tonight, I like to consider three points. First one is I like to address the question of why should we be politically informed? Why should we be politically informed? Number two, what are some types of political involvement? Number three, what are some of the snares that those political involvements bring with them? So the first point is in the positive, because I believe we should be politically informed. So the question is, why should we be? I mean, does it really make a difference? We're in the world, but not of the world. Wouldn't it be all right just to be, you know, like a hermit, like just being so insulated from the world that we don't even hardly know? In fact, I was just told today that one Mennonite person recently, when they were talking about this issue of president, they weren't even sure if they knew for sure who it was, what his name was. I'm not sure that that's would be a compliment, because I believe we should know. Why should we be politically informed? Number one, first reason I'd like to suggest is that so we can submit to their laws. Turn with me in your Bibles to Romans chapter 13. Romans 13. This is a chapter that perhaps tells us about as much as any chapter in the Bible that speaks of the separation, the difference, the division. Chapter 12 actually is 12 and 13. You could somewhat of commentary to each other. Chapter 12 relates more to the Christian sphere. Chapter 13, we're talking, has to do more with the duty of the state. Let's look there in the very beginning of chapter 13 where it says, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, and the powers that be are ordained of God." You'll notice that this verse highlights the duty of every soul. We're talking about Christians here, being written to Christians, to submit to civil authorities. Now, certainly the rest in the world have to do that as well. We do it willingly. They do it by constraint. Well, how do you submit to something that you're ignorant of? I'm saying we ought to be somewhat aware of the political arena. We live in the world. We need to know somewhat. We need to be politically informed. So we need to be informed in relation to the laws of the land. We need to know what the laws are concerning seat belts and their usage, about zoning issues, about employment issues, and, a whole host of other laws and regulations that apply to individual businesses and citizens. Ignorance is not an accepted alibi. You can't violate the law, and then when you get questioned on it, say, "Oh, well, I'm sorry, I didn't know any better." It is understood that you are supposed to be informed. You're supposed to keep yourself informed. So there's a sense in which we need to be politically informed at least enough to make sure that we're not violating the very rules and the laws which God says we're supposed to follow and submit to. I find sometimes there's some people that I get the impression that they'd rather not know. They'd rather not know so that they don't, their conscience doesn't bother them if they don't know any better. Well, probably if they have that feeling, they already know too much. I mean, they know enough to at least know that that will not get them by. So, number one, we want to know enough. We want to be politically informed so that we can submit to what we need to submit to. Number two, and this may be the most important one, we need to be politically informed so that we can pray more effectively. That we can pray more effectively. Turn back a number of pages to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Here we have the Apostle Paul. 1 Timothy chapter 2, where he says, "I exhort, therefore, that first of all supplications, prayers, intercessions, and the giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty." Note that there's four different types of prayers mentioned here. First of all, we have in verse 1 there, the matter of supplication. There's supplications. This refers to prayers that focus on special needs. You know, when we see special needs in the lives of people, we're supposed to supplicate for them. You know, that is, we're supposed to be carrying the need before God and to beg and to plead for that person or persons. Just think what different type of world we would live in. What a different communities many times we'd have if we really took the names and the names of the people, names and needs of people before God and pleaded for them. Is it possible that fewer problems would exist within society if Christians, so-called Christians, those that claim to be Christians, would supplicate to their Father? In James chapter 4, verse 2, the scripture emphatically states, "Ye have not because ye ask not." Is there a possibility that things are as bad as they are in America because maybe professing Christians have not supplicated as they should have? Number two, there's also mentions here in verse 1, supplications and prayers. I think this, I understand this word here simply refers to times of prayer, special times of prayer that are set aside for devotion and worship. And I think it's at times like this that we should remember those that are over us, that are, you know, that are those that the president, the congressmen, the leaders, local leaders, those that are, that we need to submit ourselves to. They should be certainly on our prayer list. Number three, it also mentions intercessions. This refers, I understand, to more of the original means more bold praying. In other words, where we're standing before God in behalf of another person, we're pleading their case. Now, Christ, we know, is our intercessor, the one that stands between us and God, and to carry to the Father our requests. But we are also to intercede for others. For other men and for kings here specifically, it says in verse 2, for those to carry their names and lives before God and to boldly pray for them, expecting God to hear an answer. I just talked with a brother today, and I didn't know this was happening, but he told me that in their church, different times, they get together, some of the men, early in the morning, 6 o'clock, for special prayer at special times. If I remember right, he told me that when there's a presidential election, like this last time, when there's a presidential election, the morning of the voting, the brethren got together early in the morning and spent a period of time in prayer, not for any particular person or, you know, office, but, well, I mean, it was for office, but it wasn't for that you know, Bush would be elected, not that, but rather that with the enormous responsibility that's on the hands in that is entrusted to the leaders, governmental leaders, that God would rule and overrule and have his purposes be fulfilled, and that we, regardless of whether, better watch what I say here, whether our preference is the one that's elected or not. Did I go over? Did I step too far there? I'm not sure. I got to think about that one a little bit. I believe that it is for us. I mean, someone said once that Mennonites, by and large, are 90% Republicans, not Democrats. Would be. If they would be voting, that's what they would be. And that's probably because of some of the issues that the Republicans tend to less government, less taxes and all that, whereas the other side, it's more handouts, give me this, give me that spending. Well, let me get off of that one real quick. But, you know, there may be some things which we could see that in our own limited understanding that we might say, well, it would seem like this would be better for the country. But that really is not for us to say, is it? Not for us. We simply put it in the hands of God and allow that to stay there. What I'm saying is, let's make sure we're doing our response, not about talking necessarily about it, but except to the Father. Intercessions. And then the fourth one that's mentioned here, as far as the other prayer, that is of thanks. That means we need to thank God for hearing and answering. Thank God for what he's done. That certainly ought to be included. But I believe, when you think about it, each of these four prayers require a specific knowledge, don't they? How can you pray? Your prayers are going to have to be very general, and I really think we ought to move beyond that. I mean, it's one thing for a child to pray, God bless our family, God bless this, bless that person, in general terms. But I believe as we get older and as we understand issues and needs, I believe we can pray specifically. But we need to have that specific knowledge, and that means being politically informed. James 5:16 says, "The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." And I believe that word fervent implies specific, being specific. Well, going on here in 1 Timothy chapter 2, we have in verse 2 where it specifically mentions that we need to pray for kings and for all that are in authority. You need to pray for them, no matter how good or how bad they are, we need to pray for them. No matter how moral or immoral they are, we need to pray for them. No matter how conservative or liberal they are, we need to pray for them. No matter how just or unjust they are, we need to pray for them. You know, the thought of praying for evil rulers may be shocking to some people, but you've got to remember that during the time when this was written, Nero was on the throne. And in Rome, when Paul told the believers here that they should pray for the king, Nero had already burned Rome and blamed it on the Christians. In fact, at that very time, he was launching an all-out effort of violent persecution against the believers. I believe that whether the civil authorities are perverted or not, they must be made subjects of prayer. I believe there is more influence that Christians can have on their knees than what citizens can have at the polls. Do you believe that? I do. So why should we be politically informed? Well, so that we can pray more intelligently for the leaders. When you can't remember their name, you don't know enough. When you hear of liberal decisions being handed down by the various courts of the land, when you think about that, pray for the judges. When you hear of legalized gay marriages, pray for the rulers that permit and license such illegitimate relationships. When you hear of legalized murder through abortions, pray for the rulers. Probably ought to pray for the doctors as well. They need it. Well, verse 2 here goes on to say there's two reasons why we ought to pray for rulers. Number one, we need to pray for rulers so we can lead a quiet and peaceable life. Now, that's not a selfish prayer, is it? I don't think so. I think there's an advantage to that, when we can lead a quiet and peaceable life. And it says we should pray for that very purpose. Actually, the only way that the citizens of a nation can live quiet and peaceable lives is when leaders rule with wisdom and justice and compassion and understanding, and a boldness to stand against all the special interest groups that are attempting to force their ideas, and they have their own agenda and they're trying to get their own way having things done. We need to pray for rulers that they might rule in a right way, not necessarily a righteous way, in the sense from a biblical standpoint. We can understand why they wouldn't be following the Bible like a Christian would, because it's in another sphere. We believe that if the president would get serious with God and accept the word as for what he teaches, he'll resign. He'll get out of it because, well, he'd be called to a higher calling. That's why. Number two, it also says here we need to pray for rulers so that we can live godly and sincere lives. That's what it talks here, where it says we in all godliness and honesty. Believers want freedom of worship, freedom of life and choice. I believe believers desire the right to live for God without being opposed and persecuted. And while we don't believe that every person or expect every person to become a Christian. Yet we know that when a nation respects the Christian, it is a blessing to that nation. Proverbs 14:34 says, "Righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people." So let me repeat, the reason to be informed is so that we can pray more intelligently and effectively. Let's move on to the third area. Another reason I believe we ought to be informed, and that is because those that are informed are reminded of Christ's soon coming. If you go back to Luke chapter 21, Luke 21 verse 31 says, "So likewise ye, when ye see these things come to pass, then know ye that the kingdom of God is nigh at hand." What it's saying here is that when you see certain things developing, when certain events take place, ooh, look up. Redemption draweth nigh. There's things that are happening. It's part of God's moving timeline. And I think in this verse here, in this chapter, in fact, numerous verses here, that extol the value of knowing current events. Current events are seen and understood by God's children as a wake-up call, as a reminder. It's the scoffers that Peter writes about in 2 Peter 3:4 when he says that there will come in the last days scoffers. And he says they're going to be saying, "Where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation." They weren't aware of what was happening. They thought things are just like they always were. These people were not politically informed. But we know today things are becoming worse and worse, like it was back the time of the flood. I take issue with those that saying studying prophecy is not important. I say on the basis of God's word, it is important because he tells us there's many things that we can use and know. And when this happens, it's just another reminder for us. It's a help to us. One of those prophetic scriptures is right here in Luke 21. If you read verse 25 to 28, you see all through it. Let's just read those couple of verses. "There shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity." When have you known of a time and heard of a time or read of a time when the nations are so, it's perplexed. It's hard to know. What do you do? You know, it used to be that nations would battle other nations, where there were certain wars between countries. What is it today? It's certain ideologies. It's certain, I mean, even within the United States, there are those within the United States that give great respect to those who would like to have the United States crumble. And they live right here. The terrorist organizations are not confined to one geographical nation, location. I say, how can you know, just, what was it, yesterday? Ben Laden put out another tape that says that they've been holding off the United States because they needed to get their ducks in order, so to speak. In other words, they had to get things lined up. They weren't ready to. But just like it's happening in Iraq, where you've got daily car bombings and roadside bombings, he said, United States is next. Living in a country, freedom of movement like you have today, what could ever stop? What could ever stop multiple terrorist activities in America? I don't think the president knows. I say there's a perplexion. People are perplexed. Leaders are perplexed. It says, upon the earth, distress of nations. That's what you have. With perplexity. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. I say people, they're wringing their hands. They don't know what to do. Brethren, sisters, we need to see the current political events for what they are. It's not the Republicans against the Democrats. It's not simply a period of time when terrorists are trying to, you know, make life uncomfortable with those in free nations. Rather, we see the distress of nations and men's hearts being fearful for the unknown today. And I really think that Ben Laden's tapes are a part of the prophetic word that's coming to pass. I might add that if you're politically uninformed, you'll probably be missing God's stately movings in Israel. I believe the informed that see that God is protecting that little nation that's despised by nations that are around it that are many times bigger. But you know what? They can't overrun them. How many years ago was it when they had that, 5 or 7 day war? I forget how many days it was. I mean, it surprised the nations. It surprised the world. Didn't surprise us, did it? No, not at all. If a nation goes against Israel, they got a match coming for them that they never expected. Because I believe that God is going to protect them. Well, up to this point, we've been sharing the value of being politically informed. I'd like to move now into the second part of the message, and that relates to the matter of being politically involved. And I want to be the first to say that the more that we're informed, the more tempting it is to become involved. And if we're not careful, we'll forget the scriptural mandate for the separation of church and state. If we're not careful, we'll cross that line and participate in politics. And so I like to think about what are some of the avenues, what are some of the areas of temptation, what are some of the means that the devil would use to attempt to get us on this area? What are some of the means, types of political involvement? By what means could you get involved? Well, actually, there's quite a number of organizations that would solicit our support, both from a financial standpoint and also a ideological standpoint. Because you see, the more members that a group has, the more political pull they have to exert upon the political parties that are in power at that time, or at least they can exert pressure on the individual politicians. You know, the more members they can have of, the more of a threat it is. If you don't listen on us, we're going to vote you out. You know, this happened just recently, didn't it? York School Board. They tried to get creationism, or whatever other word you want to use in there, and it backfired on them. Because there was where people stood up and rallied around and got the people all ready to vote them out. And they, on that one, I didn't. From what I read, it wasn't any other issues, whether they even knew how to read or write. If the person they were pushing for to get in was against what the others voted for, they could dismiss them. So it wasn't necessarily because they were so much better educated or better qualified. There was one main purpose behind it. And the grassroots effort that led that ousted, every one of them, I believe, that was up for re-election. I say that's the threat that every politician faces. If there's a large grassroots effort, and all these various political organizations, that's the whole purpose behind them. These organizations try to rally a lot of numbers, and so they're out to have us join them. It might be the AARP, which supports the causes of the older segment of our society. It may be the Federation of Independent Businessmen that will, you know, if you're a business person, they'll knock on your door. They'll probably call you, send you an email. They want to get your support. In fact, I was surprised one day to have gotten a call where I thought they were joking, and maybe they were. I don't know. But they were actually, they told me who they were. They were calling from, I think it was from Washington. They wanted to know if I would be willing to serve as advisor on one of the committees, as advisor to the president. On certain areas. And they went on to say that part of the thing would be having a meeting down in Washington with President Bush. Now, I wouldn't mind meeting President Bush, but it didn't take me 10 seconds to realize, when I realized what they were pushing for. They were probably looking also for, you know, other support as well. But That gets us over the line. That gets us beyond. And I say, a lot of these organizations, they make it look like, you could really help us, you know? And when really, it's not for us. I believe there are many, many organizations that attempt to influence the political process, but they all have one thing in common. And that is, like I said, they emphasize the number of members and how important it is to have large number of members to influence the political process. Well, these political organizations vary from the large organizations that the lobbyists walking the halls of in Washington or working for, on down to the local organizations within small towns and communities, counties, that are formed for certain specific things. For instance, they might be formed expressly for preventing Walmart from coming into a township, you know, where they rally around and get petitions and get people to sign up and try to come around and ask, won't you sign one of their petitions? Well, how should we relate to these organizations? The answer is, do not ever sign your name to any of those petitions or join their organization. You might say, no, wait, what they're promoting, I agree with. I'm right there next to them. You mean I can't sign a petition? I say no. Why that? Well, I'll tell you why. These organizations are bent on promoting their causes and will distort the truth if it takes it. They will resort to doing things that you would never do. They will, they won't even stop short of filing a lawsuit to have their ways and their means accomplished. They use threats. In fact, sometimes they even go beyond that. I say when you sign your name, you become party to their unlawful deeds. And you become an accompanist of their political maneuverings. Now, let me just pause enough to say this. I do believe that there is a place to express our opinion, especially concerning local issues. For example, you might get a letter from the township board that says they're requesting you to show up if you have anything to say at a local hearing. Maybe your neighbor is asking for a variance. They want to put a building up that's closer to the line, you know, the boundary line, than what's permitted by the law. Do you have any objections on that? I believe there's a place where we could, in a Christian way, show up, express how we feel. But I do believe that if we do that, we ought to, at the very least, let them know that we understand it's their decision to make, not ours. And that there are other people are going to be affected by this, not just us. We don't desire to be selfish. We will submit ourselves, you know, whatever they grant, if they grant the request or deny it, we let that in their hands because, we can respect their decision. And just like you can give your personal feeling, maybe some observations that you have made or whatever related to the issue, if that's what they want, I think it's all right to share that. But let's make sure that we recognize that our Christian testimony is more important than the outcome or the decision of that particular issue. And I think that will govern us if we think of it that way. A few years ago, I got an invitation along with some other Mennonite and Amish accountants to meet with the Social Security and the IRS down in Baltimore to work out some issues and policies that relate to Social Security exemption. They want to hear from our perspective some of the problems, some of the issues that we face, and we went. We shared. Did it affect the policies? Yes, it did. Was it wrong to influence them? I don't think so. But I think if we would have gone to Washington, D.C. with placards and demonstrated on the lawn in front of the White House, and, made a big ruckus out of the thing, even though we would have said the same thing, that would have been wrong. There is no place for that. I even question whether we should ever write to the congressman in like these massive letters. I just got a request just last week that they requested that we write to the congressman. They gave names and address of the congressman to express our feelings about certain issues. To me, it was where they're trying to get thousands of people, you know, to all just flood their mailbox. And, you know, oh, this will get their attention. It might only be 1% of the United, 1% of their constituency that sends them something, but it's a flood. You know, it's all of a sudden, oh, all they're hearing, 90% of all the mail they're getting is this way. Oh, they better be careful what they do or else they might lose their office. Well, that's the problem that you have when you have those mass mailings. Over the last few years, evangelical Christians in North America have undergone a remarkable political transformation. In fact, up until about 10 years ago, many of the evangelicals would have been convinced that religion and politics don't mix. But you know what? Now they're saying they really should mix. they shouldn't be separate. They believe they can't be really separate. You can't, you know, they go on to give such logic like you can't be separate because we're all, you know, it's all like one. In fact, just the other week, I spoke with a young man. He's a Lancaster Conference Mennonite man. And I shared the title message with him, seeing what for reaction I would get, if he had anything to share with me. I mean, he picked up on it right like that. He took an immediate issue with the title. And he left me know that he said, it's a Christian's responsibility to go out there and vote. No, we're the salt of the earth. If you're not going to vote, then those which are otherwise are going to take over. And you're letting your salt, you're not being the salt of the earth. And he started, trying to use some of that logic. You know, if we're not going to do it, who will? God expects us. We're here for this time. Well, when I shared with him some scriptures where it talked about the difference between the state and the church, you know, Christians, he got strangely quiet. He didn't have any answer for me. I got the impression that the scriptures just didn't make sense to him in that area. It just didn't fit. And I understand why. It didn't make sense to his way of thinking. In his mind, if the government would accept would adopt a Christian agenda, that'd be great. You know, it's like we don't expect that hardly, but the closest we can get to them, the closer we can get to them, the better. But do you know that when Christianity was adopted by the religion of the state for Rome, the result was that Rome corrupted the church instead of the church purifying Rome. It always works that way. So I believe today both the government and the church are better off if each remains in its own sphere. And I know that sometimes some of these organizations that would attempt, you know, they really, some of the platforms that they have, we really can agree with. We really can. So why can't we lend our support? Why not help to influence legislature to put Bible reading back in public schools? We know that would be a good idea. Why not help to influence legislature to ban abortions 100%? That would be a good idea. Well, that brings us to the last part of the message. And that is, what are some of the snares of political involvements? Number one, I'm going to go over these quickly. Number one, and that is that we become unequally yoked together with unbelievers. We know the scripture is very clear on that. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Their methods, I'd say, would embarrass us. They'll spend money in a way that you wouldn't feel comfortable with. They'll resort to, like I said, lawsuits to accomplish their goals. How can two walk together except they agree? And you're not going to agree with them. When you start talking about other issues, particularly more than that one main maybe issue that they're trying to support. Don't be yoked unequally. Unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Number two, we also lose our concept of the separation of church and state. See, you got to remember that it's the responsibility of the state to make rules and regulations, but we're called on to submit to those. And if we start influencing and attempting to influence the state, the line soon becomes very blurry as to whether we are submitting or whether we are actually, you know, causing the laws to be created. Soon, we're not sure right who's telling who what to do. In fact, we wouldn't want the state to give guidelines on how we worship, would we? I don't think the church has any right to tell them how they should operate their government. Number three, if we're not careful, one of the snares of political involvements is that soon, if we're not careful, our speech becomes us, we, and ours instead of them, they, and theirs. I mean, when you read Romans chapter 12, you'll notice the distinction. The pronouns that the Apostle Paul uses in chapter 12 when he addresses the church, he says, ye, brethren, ye, and you, and we, and us, and are. Those are the ones he uses, the pronouns. But when he goes to chapter 13, when he's addressing the state, he says, he, and they, and there. Big difference. There is not a one exception. There is no overlapping. You read it. Chapter 12 and chapter 13. Every pronoun isn't. There's two different camps. It's so pronounced. So, let's be politically correct. This country is not our country, but rather it's the country in which we presently live. We are not at war in Iraq. Rather, the United States is at war in Iraq. Am I saying it the right way? I think it is. And I'll be the first to admit that sometimes we use the wrong words innocently. But I'd like to encourage you to think about it. I believe that it's important to conscientiously remember, or try to remember, to use the correct terminology. I believe it'll help us to remember the distinction. You catch yourself. We talk about we, you know, our, the country. And you, if you're not careful, you actually identify yourself with it. And I think it's better if we use terminology that shows the separation. Number four, another one of the snares of political involvements, and that is we get ourselves in the corner when we get out of our sphere. For example, I have a question for you. If you had to answer this question, what would you say? Should the government use capital punishment? Should they cause people to die? Death sentence. Is that right? Good idea or bad idea? Well, is it right for us to take life? No, it's not right for us. And yet that we must acknowledge that the Bible does say that the government will not use the sword in vain. What's the sword used for? To give a little slice on the hand or something? You know, create a little bit of a blister? Not at all. You know what it's used for. It's used to not only to maim, but to kill. And it's with God's sanction. So you get yourself in a corner. How would you answer that as a Christian? You can't do it because you can't be in both camps. The one just doesn't, well, they just don't mesh. It's like oil and water. They just don't mix. One of the reasons we don't vote is that when we vote, we give authority to the man to do what he would not otherwise be able to do as an individual. I don't know if you ever thought about that or not. But you know what? If a man go out with a gun and kill somebody, what happens? He gets charged with what? Murder. Yeah, homicide, whatever. He gets charged with that. He can't do that. Now, wait a minute. That isn't true. If he is appointed by the state to wear that badge, he's a policeman. Can he shoot to kill? He absolutely can. I'm saying when you vote, you are actually giving the authority to someone else, to someone, to do what they're called to do. In a sense, you're giving them that authority. I don't know that I want to do that. No, no way do I want to even suggest that someone should do that. Working for the state, they can. But I can't vote for a person because otherwise I'm the one that's actually responsible to help to get him into there. I'm ready to admit that we're happy to live in a country where riots and robberies and plunderings are held in check by the one who beareth not the sword in vain. But that's not the church. It's not for us. It's another camp. I also think, this is the last one I'm going to mention, one of the other snares, and we have to be careful on this one, we should be very slow to criticize the president and other leaders because, and here's why, not only because we know we shouldn't, we should pray for them, but not criticize them. Because we do not have access to the classified information that they use, and they have, and they use to make their decision. You know, things can look altogether different sometimes when you realize, oh, I didn't realize that. But you know what? They have access to classified information they can't even divulge that they even know about. Because as soon as they divulge that they know, you know what happened just weeks ago, where they divulged that there was secret wiretapping going on without approval of those that were communicating with Al-Qaeda out of the country. Somebody found out about it and thought this was they blew the whole story. And all of a sudden, that put at jeopardy the very things that they were using to try to defend the country. So, how do we know? How are we? What information do we have that we even should have an opinion what they should do? I mean, should have President Bush invaded Iraq? Who am I to say? If Iran continues on its proposal to develop nuclear weapons, Should they be invaded? Who am I to say? How do I know? I don't have to express an opinion on that. I'm saying we don't need to know. And I'm saying we've got to be careful lest we express opinions on things we don't know anything about or very little about. In closing, I believe that the Christian's attitude toward politics should not be of unconcern or of disinterest. Yet at the same time, we would cautious about being overly anxious or concerned about it, because it could cause us to worry. I believe it could. I'll admit that as Christians, we would rather have a president appoint conservative judges on the Supreme Court rather than liberal judges. In fact, I believe, I can say this without being critical, I think, I believe that liberal judges in the past have been responsible, at least in part, to the decline in the moral values and fiber of this country. They paved the way for recognition of same-sex marriages and legalized killings of the unborn. And let me tell you, America is going to pay the price, I believe, for it. In fact, they have already. I talked just the other day, I was talking with a liberal Mennonite that confided in me that years ago he had spent thousands of dollars for psychiatric help for him and his wife after he had agreed that she could have an abortion. They paid the price. They paid a dear price for it. Well, the answer is not to become political activists, but rather to fall on our knees and pray for the kings and all those that are in authority. I mean, we can do more on our knees than people can do marching in Washington. May God help us to be the preserving salt that God expects us to be in these last days. Politically informed, but not politically involved. May the Lord bless you.